Good evening, Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the fifth day of March 2024. It's going to be Chapter 6 in Mosaic 2. Of course, we're talking about the lipid species known as plasmalogens. These are ether-linked lipids, which have an unusual biological activity in the cell. Particularly, one take-home point you should have in your mind already is that plasmalogen biosynthesis is directly related to peroxisomal integrity and the potential to proliferate peroxisomes within the cell so that the mediation of control over reactive oxygen species proliferation can be reduced. So the more peroxisomes in the cell, the lower the potential for increasing reactive oxygen, which can cause damage, as you know, to all the macromolecules, proteins, membrane lipids, and nucleic acids. So it's a protective role. Now, the plasmalogen not only is involved in peroxisomal division, it's also involved in peroxisomal biochemical processes, one of which is the synthesis of plasmalogen, but also it is associated with, plasmalogens are associated with, apparently, the net import of proteins into the peroxisome, not all of which are involved simply in plasmalogen biosynthesis, because many of the proteins in peroxisome also are involved in the oxidation of fatty acids, so that there's a limit fatty acid that can be generated to be transferred, yes, to the mitochondria for complete beta oxidation, or which can be used to resynthesize very long-chain fatty acids using malonyl-CoA generated from acetylcholinesterase, so that the reformation of membrane lipids can occur, all with the interaction of the peroxisome with the plasma membrane. And plasmalogens seem to play a role there too because they're necessary for peroxisomal biological activity. So when proteins are targeted into the peroxisome by using the PEX7, which is this, they call it a receptor, but basically it's a type of receptor that translocates cargo peptides across membranes into the lumen, or the, you know, just say the interior of, in this case, the peroxisome. So that means the linkage of plasmalogen biosynthesis to the normal biological function and integrity of the peroxisome is linked up to the fact that many of the proteins that are brought in to the peroxisome are involved in plasmalogen biosynthesis and unique to that organelle. That doesn't occur anywhere else. Now, what we've been talking about last time is even further interesting in terms of the integration of subcellular events associated with the production of this one unique phosphoglycerol lipid. Remember, plasmalogens have not only an alkyl group, that is, they have an ether linkage at the one position, but also they have a vinyl group that's been introduced because of a specific desaturase. So they're vinyl ether-linked lipids. Other than that, the rest of the molecule is pretty much the same as any phosphoglycerol lipid. There's going to be a fatty acid in the two position, which is often a very long-chain fatty acid with polyunsaturated character. Arachidonate, eicosapentaenoate, docosahexaenoate. We talked about this several times now. So that means that fatty acid can be utilized for the eicosanoid pathways. But the lysophosphatidic acids themselves, as you know, have receptors, and they mediate other responses endomembranously, including control over G-protein coupled receptors. Now, I remember that. That's just in my memory. But we've talked about this over the last 3 or 4 months in several different lecture motifs. So understand every time a lipid is modified by removing a fatty acid from the two position, That lipid then takes on a different, yet very powerful and potent biological activity. So I haven't yet got to where we're looking at lysoplasmalogen specifically, but I'm looking for it in the literature. Now I want you to realize that the papers you can see that some of the papers have been published, you know, even back as far as 2004, 2011, 2013, et cetera. These were papers that were the initial groundbreaking simply of examining plasmalogen biosynthesis and its complexity with peroxisome. And some of those other earlier papers like 2018, 2019, which I was covering, were talking about those circular RNAs, which, you know, are also linked to plasmalogen biosynthesis and association of those particular vinyl ether lipids in the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane. And then triggering an alteration of the spliceosome so that you get back splicing, meaning that rather than just simply removing the intron, when the intron is being excised and the junction is being starting to be formed to link, say, exon 1 and exon 2, the exon distal to that spliceosome site then flips over and binds to the exon in the wrong orientation, and sometimes in the wrong collection of exons. So ultimately, if that transcript is translated, it's not going to be the protein that was supposed to be generated. But these circular RNAs do not participate in any general event in translation. They, in fact, corrupt, or I would say now the word I would use is modulate translation of target RNAs, which become circularized because of these various processes, such as backsplicing and the lariat of removal of introns, generating purely exon-derived circular RNAs. And some of those exon-derived circular RNAs can also, during the process of their synthesis, pick up unique introns. So they're an intron-exon chimera circular RNA, or they can pick up exons from different genes. So these are really unusual molecules, these circular RNA. They have RNA species in them, sequences in them, I should say, that can come from the same gene, but shuffled in the wrong way. They can still have some introns, or they can be purely intron or purely exon. So it's three different general classes or molecular species of these circular RNAs. So you can see why they're very interesting to anyone that wants to have an idea about the regulation of gene expression, and here, very, very profoundly, as it relates to lipid metabolism, particularly of a particular lipid, this vinyl ether lipid plasmalogen. Okay? So let's try to finish this or these papers up. I'm not finished with the mosaic, because we're only on number 6, and I think we're going to have enough to talk about that. We'll certainly get up to that magic number of 13, and then maybe a coda, right? So the number doesn't really change. It's only just 13 lectures. All right, so indeed, plasmalogens are mostly found, again, in the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane, whereas the localization of the plasmalogens on the outer leaflet can be augmented by lowering the expression of this CDC50A. Now, that protein is a beta subunit of the P4 ATPase. And it is essential for exiting of most of the P4 ATPases from the ER by forming a heterooligomer. So that subunit plays a role in plasmalogen localization of plasma membrane, as well as being just a subunit of a P4 ATPase and moving that ATPase from the ER. So you see a lot of things going on here, right? So the CDC50A is part of that flipase. That's why you will find plasma allergens typically on the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane, but sometimes on the outer leaflet. So that flip base is doing something to the endomembrane, not to the endomembrane, it's the plasma lemma membrane in terms of its sequence. Okay, not just composition, sequence, like where is the plasma allergen found? It's either digitated out of the inner leaflet or the outer leaflet, and the flip base plays a role. Yet the flip base is an ATP, is a subunit for an ATPase. Now, under a CD58 knockdown, okay, so here we're deep into looking at plasma allergen biosynthesis. The FAR1, now remember what that is, fatty acid reductase, but just the isoform 1. Remember that reductase is going to take the fatty acyl-CoA and turn it into a fatty alcohol. And that fatty alcohol is ending up on the one position of the dihydroxyacetone-based phosphoglycerol lipid that will ultimately make the first phase of the ether linkage, because that fatty acid, that fatty alcohol will make the ether linkage. And then that same fatty acid in one position will then get desaturated, the fatty alcohol will get desaturated to make the vinyl. Okay? So just remember that now I'm just reminding what FAR1 is. Now, when knockdown of this flip base is obtained, okay, protein levels of FAR1 are elevated. Now, that's curious because the FAR1 is the reductase that's involved in the synthesis of that alcohol. And that's not happening at the plasma membrane. That's at the peroxisomal ER junction. Okay, so the flip base has an effect there, but it's more complicated than that, because you know that subunit of that flip base, that C50A, is also involved in mobilizing that ATPase from the endoplasmic reticulum membrane. So it could be playing that role and then subsequently affecting the FAR1, which is localized to that ER peroxisomal membrane interface. Okay. Now, this research here that I'm talking about then tells you they identified an ATP8B2. They were the first ones to do it. And they found out that the ATP8B2 was the flipase for the plasmalogens. And that paper only was published in 2022. This is very new research. The one that I'm reading off now is the original 2023 paper. Don't worry, it'll be in the show notes. Now, what they wanted to determine is, were the plasmalogens in the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane being sensed? And that sensing then related to the fatty acid reductase 1 activity or localization, as well as final plasmalogen biosynthesis. Okay? That's what they wanted. And they were, at this point, they weren't interested in a whole lot of other things that might be going on. But they want to at least know that. And again, this is only paper that's like a year and a half old, maybe, if that. All right. So they admit in this 2023 paper that they're still trying to work out this whole biosynthetic pathway simply for the regulation of plasmalogens, all right? So that's what they're doing. They want to know about asymmetric distribution of plasmalogens. They want to know if that's a sensing device. And they want to know if it's a signaling domain. Okay? And ultimately, they're looking at the regulation of that fatty acid reductase. Because what happens when plasmalogen levels reach their correct mole percent, the protein that is removed from the biosynthetic pathway, so no new de novo synthesis, that is, of plasmalogens will occur because the net amount has been reached, is that fatty acid reductase, isoform 1. It goes through ubiquitination and removal. So you see, this is another part of the regulation it's still trying to work out. Okay? So they have an observation, an ectopic expression of an ER-localizing protein. And that ER-localizing protein, now again, get your pencil and paper out, the gene is called TMEM189. Now, TMEM189 is the plasminyl ethanolamine desaturase. Okay, can you dig that, right? So, the ectopic expression of that desaturase promotes the degradation of the reductase. Okay? So, two enzymes involve plasminogen biosynthesis. One of them, if it's ectopically expressed in the ER, and I told you where this, that's where the reductase does its work, will cause that reductase to be removed, be degraded via the proteasomal pathway. Okay? Now, they want to know exactly how this TMEM189 does that to the FIR1 protein. Now, they admit that FIR1 loss is not as important as the TMEM189 mediated final synthesis of plasmalogens. Okay, now why is that? Because that reductase is what makes the fatty alcohol, but that desaturase finishes plasmalogen biosynthesis. Yet they think it's the reductase is regulatory, the regulatory step maybe, although I think the AGPS is equally regulatory, right? Rather than the desaturase. So they're trying to figure out why the desaturase would cause the reductase to be removed. I don't think that's a complex argument. If the reductase is one of the rate-limiting reactions for overall plasmalogen biosynthesis, remember you have several enzymes to synthesize plasmalogens in multiple endomembranous locations in the cell, all working coordinatedly. It does kind of make sense that the final process, you know, the desaturase of that alcohol in the one position making the vinyl group might be the one that should deliver the knockdown of the pathway, right, as feedback inhibition. So that makes sense to me. But the people that are writing a lot of these papers, they're not biochemists. I can tell they're not biochemists. Certainly not lipid biochemists. The way they talk about lipids is like someone that doesn't know much about them. Okay. And they're not putting them down. I'm just saying. They're not, but at least they're looking at the lipids. These people, most of the people we're reading these papers from, are cancer researchers. They're just saying, hey, we need to look at plasmalogens because they're related to cancer, which they are. Okay? All right. So they want to know if this whole interaction between the desaturase and the reductase is really more about the interaction between the peroxisome and the ER, or the plasma membrane and the peroxisome and the ER, okay? And the total signaling phenomena. I'm the same, I agree. So here's one thing I pulled out, though, that isn't in this paper, because it's published just recently. Co-transcription of the plasmanial ethanolamine desaturase 1, PEDS 1, also known as in human, the TMEM189 gene, co-transcription of that gene and a neighboring downstream gene. Now, this is really cool. That neighboring downstream gene is a ubiquitin conjugating enzyme E2. And what that co-transcription, what goes down when that happens in the nucleus is it generates a very rare read-through transcript, which results in a fusion protein, which has the full sequence of the desaturase and the full sequence of the ubiquitin conjugating enzyme E2. So you have a protein that has two different functions, right? Because of this co-transcription process. I mean, that is amazing. So the protein that's encoded by this whole system then is going to have transmembrane regions, but it doesn't always go to those membranes. Why? Because there's alternative splicing of this RNA that results in multiple transcript variants. Okay? Now, is this part of the circular RNA alteration of the spliceosome? None of these papers were dealing with that. But we know from the other papers that there is this phenomena. So I think we're starting to see in real time in the literature where a brand new signaling pathway is being reported on by multiple groups studying, really doing really good research, looking at individual associations of this. Some of them are cancer researchers, some of them are not. Or they're in different, totally different studies of the cancer, right? Some of them are pharmaceutical scientists wanting to just look at targets for drugs to target to knock out all these terrible cancers, such as thyroid cancer or, you know, breast cancer, prostate cancer, right? Yes. Remember before, too, we were talking about plasmalogens being associated with what? Neurodegeneration, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, okay? So you can imagine the pharmaceutical companies want to spend some time on this. So what I'm seeing here is in 2023, 2024, these papers, these are going to be the seminal papers that will ultimately pull out a whole new pathway. And so what you've got me doing here is reporting on the synthesis of the understanding of how that pathway may work and what that pathway would necessarily entail, okay? Which is going to, in the end, be very, 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 very unique. I know that very unique are not two words you should put together, but I did there, and it's because it's an ad hoc statement. What can I say? I'm saying that because if you think about it, this is a lipid controlling all of this transcriptional activity, not just about genes associated with it. In fact, so far, we haven't even found those. But genes regulating RNA metabolism, full stop, which means a control over transcription or post-transcriptional, even pre-transcriptional alteration or early transcript processing. And then all the translational events associated with whatever's turning on the circular RNAs, which are unique to specific genes and have this complexity with their pure intron, their pure exon, or their chimeras of exons and introns, maybe even from different chains. And where ALU sequences are helping drive the homologous pairing to make the circular RNA, which could even mean something vestigial about early stages of mutational, insertional mutation that leads to gene duplication. Okay, so see how much is involved. I mean, I'm sure you're following because, you know, I know that you're really good researchers, right? So this is kind of where we are right now. The CD50A knockdown condition, protein level of FAR is elevated. And as I said, maybe I didn't mention this. Even though the FAR1 is elevated, when you knock down that component of the flipase, it doesn't have any effect on plasmalogens. Okay, so go figure that, right? It doesn't have any effect on the total level of plasmalogens. Of course, that in a way doesn't surprise me, because whenever you get an alteration induced by knocking out or using, you know, siRNA to decrease the activity, you know, to titrate down the activity of a gene product, it's totally foreign to what the cell is normally doing in terms of regulation. So it shouldn't surprise you that even doing these sorts of experiments doesn't seem to have an effect on one of the principal players, which is what? This vinyl ether plasmalogen. Yeah. All right. Let me check my time here because we're going to go into a cancer paper, specific cancer paper. Yeah, I'm going to try to get into it. Okay. Medulloblastoma. We're just going to call it MB. Very nasty cancer. Very nasty childhood brain tumor, highly malignant. In fact, of all of the pediatric brain tumors, it covers about 20%. and it involves an intracranial embryonic tumorigenesis. It's not that rare, sadly. There are 500 little kids that are diagnosed with medulloblastoma in the US every year. And guess what? It's not just very little children. All, if you take the entire population that are diagnosed, 60% of the children are under 15. So that means even older, like older teenagers, can get this cancer. And okay, now there's different types of this cancer, this medulloblastoma. There's a subgroup called wingless Wnt activated. Then there's sonic hedgehog activated. Then there's just the old-fashioned TP53 wild type. And then there's an SHH, that is sonic hedgehog transcription factor, activated and TP53 mutation. And then there's a non-Wnt, non-sonic hedgehog type. So there's multiple types of this. But there you're looking again at the transcriptional regulation, transcription factors in particular. And a Wnt, of course, is a signaling molecule. So they found several medulloblastoma subgroup biomarkers. And they're trying to figure out if there are any good targets there. And of course, if they're a good target, are they going to be oncogenes or the tumor suppressor genes, etc. And they're finding a lot of the things you might guess. c-Myc, TP53, CDK6, you know, it's a cell cycle kinase, ALK, you've got other ones here, SNCA1, okay, genes that we've talked about before. I'm not going to go into all their ontologies. Now, here's what's interesting for this paper. I mean, this is interesting, full stop anywhere. They're talking now, very at the very, very beginning of this paper, they're talking about the fact that there appear to be long non-coding RNAs in medulloblastoma. And in fact, many of those subgroups that I was just talking about tend to have these RNAs. And guess what kind of LNC RNAs, long non-coding RNAs, they're finding? circRNAs RNAs. So these circRNAs RNAs, everybody now knows over the last several years, I mean, few years really, highly pathogenic, highly associated with cancer. And they have already been decided to be good potentials for diagnostic and therapeutic targeting. And we already know how to synthesize, so we don't need to go through that whole process. This paper wants to let you know what these circular RNAs do, so we don't need to get into that detail for you, because you already know it, because your professor's already lectured it. Now, these circ RNAs in the medulloblastoma, there are two of them that have been noticed, a circ SKA3 and a circ DTL. And both of those circular RNAs in this medulloblastoma promote the proliferation, migration, and invasion of MB cells. And they seem to be regulating multiple levels of gene expression, which is no surprise because they're circ RNAs, right? So they identified a subgroup of circ RNAs in over 120 MB patients. And they were using RNA-seq, of course. I won't give you too much detail, but they did a biostatistical approach to show where how this is done, using what's called a random forest classification to identify subgroups of those circ RNAs, because they're trying to target down, you know, drill down to the diagnostic potential of them. Right? They also used RNA fluorescence, in situ hybridization on the clinical samples, and that allowed them then to look for specific circs. So they found one, CIRC67306, and that's a sonic hedgehog-specific biomarker. Okay? And what they found, this is how I'm going to end the lecture this evening, is that CIRC67306, this sonic hedgehog biomarker for MB, seems to reprogram lipid metabolism in a way the authors believe inhibits enhances tumorigenesis.